This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Our friend Brittany is on the hotline right now from MissouriPennTours.com. They went through, they had the tornado in May, but they're back up. For the most part, they just reopened October 1st for history and ghost tours at the Missouri State Penitentiary.
Well, what happened was Friday, we were talking about that very story. And inevitably, when you discuss the Missouri State Pen, somebody from the listening audience will call. They've done hard time. Now we've had two or three calls and verified calls. We're talking about guys who were in for one guy was 27 years.
Yeah. The first dude and this guy.
We call from Friday.
From Friday.
Can you pull that up?
Give me a few minutes.
Yeah, let's Greg, grab that real quick.
But I think both of those.
I want to rerun that.
I think both of those guys were in for over 20 years. Huh. The first dude and the guy we talked to Friday.
And so... It is the perfect time, because if they're open for Halloween, if there are ghosts in this world, if there are spirits, if there are lingering things, it has to be somewhere like this, right? Yeah. I mean, think of all the terrible unhappiness and the level of evil from the, you know, prior. I know I've met some guys who went to jail, and all of us were, you know, of course not guilty, but maybe there were some bad guys in there.
A couple demons in there.
Well, they said it was the 47 bloodiest acres in the U.S. due to the rioting and the murdering that went on inside those walls. And they only shut it down in 2000 and what
was
year?
2004? I think. Yeah, 2003, well, 2004.
Let's find out from Brittany. Hold on.
Nicknamed the bloodiest 47 acres in America, the Missouri State Penitentiary was in operation in Jefferson City from 1836 to 2004. Once housing 5,200 inmates, including such famous names as Sonny Liston, Pretty Boy Floyd, James Earl Ray, and Bob Bigella, over 40 inmates were led to the gas chamber. It saw a bloody riot in 1954. It's been featured on Ghost Hunters and Ghost Adventures. And now it's just reopened after being damaged by a tornado this past May for a new season of ghost tours. Please welcome, from the Missouri State Penitentiary, Brittany Moorman.
Hey, Brittany, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me. I heard you guys were talking about us last week. We received quite a few calls.
That's what Jake said today. You guys got blown up about that. People coming to Jeff City to see the prison.
Yes, we actually just recently reopened our season. We had a tornado in May, unfortunately, that damaged parts of the property. And so we opened back up October 1 and we'll close November 30th.
And I cannot wait for this, because Halloween's the perfect time. You still have the, you can sleep over, you can do the ghost tours, paranormal tours, and then there's a sleepover tour, right?
Well, unfortunately, due to that damage, we've had to just eliminate those tours as of right now. So we just have the two-hour history and the two-hour paranormal tour.
Oh, you got to get the overnight stuff. Because the overnight stuff is just spookiest.
I know. We're hoping to get that back next spring, whenever we reopen for that season.
And you can even get a private two-hour ghost tour.
You can. Mm-hmm. If you have a group that wants to come into the Missouri State Penitentiary, they are more than welcome to book out a private tour with us, and they'll have the whole place to themselves.
See, that's fantastic. Now, would they say this is the 47 bloodiest acres in the U.S.? Now, you'll have to help me explain to the audience why that is so.
So Time Magazine actually did a story on the Missouri State Penitentiary. I think it was back in the 50s. And due to just all the deaths and the rioting and the murders that took place there, I mean, they dubbed it the bloodiest 47 acres. And when you hear from our guides, who were actually previous corrections officers and a previous warden even, they will tell you, I mean, it was definitely so. It was a terrible place to be. It was a maximum security prison.
Sure. And it talks about... there was a huge wave of rioters stormed the deputy warden's office. Armed troopers on the roof were finally forced to open fire with machine guns and riot guns to push them back to the yard. But at one point, there were 2,500 rioters were on the loose inside the walls, and there was four mm-hmm. buildings burning.
Yep.
And how did they finally get them? Yeah. How did they finally get them back under control?
Honestly, that would be a question for our tour guides. That's why we asked people to take the tour. I'm just a communicator. They're the ones who can tell you all those stories. I mean, it's amazing the stories that they can tell.
And, you know, one of the heaviest parts of this for the penitentiary is the fact that it was, how many executions went on there?
There were over 30 executions.
Actually, 40. In total, says 40 inmates were put, were put to death in the gas chamber between 37 and 1989. And, I mean, and that chamber still sits there.
It does. The last individual actually executed was in 1989. It was George Tiny Mercer. And we do take people down to the gas chamber. We've got like a little plaque that people can see the individuals who have been put to death there and the reasoning as to why. And so on our tours, you'll see housing unit one, which is the control center area, which also houses a few inmates. You'll see housing unit three. You'll also go into the dungeon cells and housing unit three. And then you'll go down to the gas chamber.
And I had the opportunity through a mutual friend to go to Folsom Prison and actually take a tour. And they don't give tours there. It's still an open working prison. And they have not done executions there, but they did at one point, and it was hanging. And he walked us into that area that's now locked off and closed. And it's stunningly dark. I mean, it really... when you really stop and go, hold on, these were at one point people, like normal people. They went the wrong way and they did something. They had to be removed from this earth. So said the law. And this was their last... This is how their last days, months, years rang out. Yeah. It's a heavy thing. It's a very, very dark thing.
It is. The executions by hangings actually stopped due to it. They were public back in the day, and people would just make such a spectacle of it.
Yeah.
And so I believe back in the 1930s, the governor signed a bill to call for execution by legal gas.
Yeah, it's
that type of spectacle.
In the gas chamber, to me, that's so... Like, I feel like that's the most inhumane thing I can imagine. Maybe I have a fear of being suffocated, and that's where it comes from. But the idea that you get strapped into a chair, a gurney, they close the door. It's an airtight situation. And then they look at you through glass windows as they pump. What gas did they pump in there to kill people?
I think it was cyanide.
Which, as far as I know, is one of the most horrible deaths you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So,
it's quite sad, actually, whenever you hear about it.
No, it's very, and I think it's important to have these places open. I find them fascinating. And if there are ghosts in this world, if there are spirits trapped anywhere, they're in places like this. What do you see?
Sure.
What do you think?
So I've actually never been able to experience anything over there.
See?
But I've got quite a few individuals who can say there's definitely something over there. They've seen sightings of different individuals. And I will tell you, there was one time I was over there with a documentary film crew, and they were up near some cells where an individual was murdered. And I didn't tell them that. I just wanted them to come down and, you know, tell me how they felt when they were up there. And they got done filming, and they said, "Oh, my gosh, we had such an eerie feeling up by those cells." And I said, "Well, I wasn't going to tell you, but..." there was an individual who was actually brutally murdered up there. And they said, "Oh my gosh, that's probably exactly what we were feeling." And so you do have people come in and on these tours, and they get those feelings. And without even us telling stories, they know what happened. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, and I'm one of those guys, like I've gone all over the world into weird places like this, from, you know, the prisons like the Dublin Gaol. And, you know, that was a pretty infamous prison in Ireland. Where they put all of their IRA guys and, you know, the executions, you know, even as far as Auschwitz and Birkenau in Poland. And I've been to the Church of Bones in Prague. It's a church made completely on the inside from human remains, to the catacombs in France, you know, just hundreds, if not millions of people underneath the streets of Paris that are just lining these old limestone quarries, these underground quarries. And no, I there's no ghosts. I've yet to see them, but I have friends like Klaus who has a little EMP meter, walks around, swears to God that he can see them, that he can feel them. I've been on those walking ghost tours, and I want to see something like that. And that's why I still go, well, if there's anything left, it's at a place like this prison in Jeff City, this former 47 bloodiest acres in the U.S., a place where they executed 40 people with gas, a place, you know, that hundreds of people had perished in terrible ways there. And And so, I don't know. I'm always conflicted with that. And I can tell just from talking to you, Brittany, that you don't buy into that.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's what you make of it, honestly. I can tell you from being over there at all different hours of the night, I don't want to be over there alone because it is an odd feeling when they're over there, even if you believe in it or not. So I'll leave that to the people who are coming on our tours.
So do you, there's obviously got to be places in the prison that are not open to the public. Now, have you scoured every square inch of that place?
I have not, unfortunately. I have been to some places where we don't typically take people on tours. And it's just very eerie. Whenever it's a place that people don't pass through every day. It's pretty fascinating as well, just to kind of walk through it with those people who have been on the property before it was decommissioned to learn more about what they did in these areas.
Oh, we've had two phone calls. Both of those guys, the big thing they were talking about is being sent to isolation in the hole. And there were three stages of all, I guess the first one was dark and all you got was a paper gown. Then you might get, if you were good, another 30 days, you would end up with a blanket. And then another 30 days, you'd get a sliver of light or whatever. But it was like three stages of getting out of isolation, depending on how you were acting when you were in isolation. It's pretty
now,
dark.
Now, unfortunately, those cells actually used to be, they still are in housing unit 4, but with us having some of that damage, actually housing unit 4 on our property has sustained the most damage in the tornado. So we unfortunately can't go into those dungeons at the moment.
Now, can't
explore the dungeons in housing unit 3.
Will you fix that? I mean, will you guys go back and try to make it safe?
We are working closely with the Office of Administration for Missouri to see what those next steps are. So we are trying to figure that out. We have so many people who are interested in this property, and we want to make sure that they have access to all of these places that they had previously.
Yeah, no, it's pretty crazy. How'd you get this job, by the way? Because if you're just joining the show, Brittany's with us, MissouriPenTours.com. She is, what is your title with the penitentiary?
Well, I'm the communications manager for the Convention and Visitors Bureau, but we actually help run the tours and operate those, advertise them over at the Missouri State Penitentiary.
How'd you end up in this gig? Because it's a pretty good, weird gig.
It is. It's very fun. So I actually worked for the Missouri Division of Tourism previously. So I'd worked closely with this office, and it was kind of a really good fit when this person was leaving, and I thought, I'm going to throw my hat in the ring. So it's definitely a great job. You never know what you're going to see the next day.
See, I love exploring. Love exploring stuff. Like the thing to me is I would take a job at a place like this only so I could find a way to go to the places that weren't open to the public. I'm talking about, there's basement hallways. You know that there are crawl spaces and closets and tunnels that you know there are. And, I mean, I'm like, we got to go see this stuff.
Well, come on out anytime. I know I always try to jump on the tours with the wardens because I feel like they probably know the deepest, darkest secrets of that place. But I'll tell you, those corrections officers know quite a bit as well.
Well, they know everything.
You never know what you're going to hear.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, yeah, because you think about the infamous people that were here. I mean, you guys, obviously ones like, was it Babyface that was there? What was the, I'm trying to think of the infamous. It was Charles. It was Pretty Boy Floyd. That's right.
Charles, yeah, Pretty Boy Floyd.
And then
Sonny Liston, James Earl Ray.
Yeah, James Earl Ray, obviously the most evil of all. I mean, and who knows what yeah. I mean, he's a whole nother story of like how that all happened because he definitely did not work alone. Mm-hmm. And, about there was women in here too, Emma Goldman and Katie Richards O'Hare. So there were. What was the story with the women in prison?
Kate Richards O'Hare, she actually went out and became the second in command at the California Department of Corrections. And between her and Emma Goldman, they were able to make quite a bit of improvements whenever they came into the property. A lot of people followed them, like a lot of reporters, due to them being such they're very big protesters. And so anytime they would write, the reporters would come and the warden didn't want that to look badly on him. And so Kate Richards O'Hare and Emma Goldman actually got him to do quite a bit of improvements to the women's part of the prison.
And this is back in the 1890s when there really were co-ed prisons. And now we don't see that obviously anymore, but they had them separately. But what kind of women were in here?
Honestly, I'm not quite sure too much about the women. I just know really of those two because they weren't there very long. I think they realized very quickly that these women and men can't cohabitate in the prison, and so they had built the women's prison a little bit farther outside of town and moved them pretty shortly.
Because you're talking about, you know, 1842 to 1890, you know, so there's a 50-year span in it's pretty amazing that if you think about that, what women were put into, because there weren't a lot of women criminals. I think it was most like prostitution, you know, it's, owing money, like stuff like that. It was a whole different moral prison for women.
I think, yeah, and I think they had a few women who had murdered husbands, protested against the government, different things like that. But I think they were relocated around 1926.
All right, listen, I am going to come down there, and I'm going to let you know ahead of time, and I can't wait to see this, because I historically, I just think it's fantastic. I'm glad you guys reopened after that tornado in May, because it is for a lot of reasons. I think it's important to see what happens if you become that human being that needs to be put into a prison. Also, I think it needs to be shown very clearly that, you know, there is a level of humanity that you're supposed to show people, another human being. Yes, you're in a prison. No, it's not supposed to be fun, but you are supposed to be in a situation that is not inhumane. Listen, have you ever been to jail, by the way?
I have not. I've heard many stories, though, from our tour guide.
You stay there. Hold on. I feel like I would be a great spokesperson for that. Because I nerd out so terribly. Like, people would be wanting to get away from me with the stuff I would tell them.
You'd get lost on the tours because you'd be showing them something. Oh, didn't take them a whole different route that nobody had planned on, though.
Like, and she does a great job, by the way. That's, she's great at her job. But, I mean, you know, I have a lot of questions, man. I need some answers here.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Oh, no one better to research.
This, no.
And this is just one location. I would put you in charge of research and the backstory and some cuckoo birds that were put in there, some others that, like she said, espionage, and there was one was fighting for the right to have birth control around World War One with two of the women that were
listed. What I mean. So when I called it, they were put into a moral prison. Yeah, it was morality. Mm-hmm. Like, they were like, no, women can't, you know,
protest.
Yeah, don't have an opinion. You're going to the hole. And that's what I thought was very interesting about the idea, because women would get put in prison for stuff that men would not get put in prison for.
Of course.
You know, you raise your voice too loud, you stand up too much, and they were literally back in the 1800s like, boop, boop.
Hey, yeah, you're going to go away for a minute.
Simmer down, bish.
Either hysteria.
That's before we figured out to give them the ice pick.
Yeah, that's right. Well, there's about that time that up in St. Joe, another Missouri staple, the Glor Psychiatric Museum, they were one of the forerunners in the frontal lobotomy, which is they would put an ice pick, basically, in the thinnest part of the bone of your skull, which is on the inside of your eye towards your nose, and they would simply tap, tap, tap their way into you being quite a calm human being as they would scramble your frontal lobe. Now, the depth and the width, and it isn't like, you know, not everybody's built the same, so you're just randomly scrambling some eggs up there.
You're just stirring spaghetti, yeah.
Yeah, and you're breaking apart these neural pathways, so pretty soon she's like, oh, look at her. Look how calm she is now. Yeah, she's been staring at the doorknob for 3 months.
Mm-hmm. You want more coffee, dear?
She's not talking back.
Yeah, and that's another great Missouri offering.
By the way, you're going to have to ride down and see this, because Brittany, when you put her on hold, she's like, he's not just radioing me, like, is he? Like, he's going to come see me.
Yeah, of course.
Brittany, you've been warned. Yes, he will come see you.
Okay. It's just a matter of, I just got to cut the whole day out so I can get up early, drive down, be there when it opens, and spend a few hours, and then drive home from Jeff City, because it's a couple hours, right?
Yeah.
No big deal. I just got to cut the day out and get in the car and go.
Yeah.
And because you know me, man, I love this. I've been through Alcatraz. I've been to, you know,
Folsom.
I've been to the prison in Ireland. I've been to, we went through a prison in Russia, which was super heavy. A gulag. I'm trying to think where else. Oh, I've been to, in Vietnam, went to the Hanoi Hilton. I think it's the How Low prison is the name of it. And, you know, it was there for 100 years before we hit the Vietnam War. It was run by these evil bastards, the French, who are the despicable problem in all that. Like,
that's the awful one we were looking at pictures of, where they just bind people by their feet and just.
Yes, they would just basically, like, stockade their feet. So their ankles would be encased between two. There'd be 30 feet of wood with a half a circle, the top a half circle, and the other piece underneath. They'd lock them shut on your ankles. And these guys would sit on concrete, like, locked to each other. 30 people.
And there you are.
I said, until they got tired of you. And they still have a guillotine in the middle. And it was the guillotine that they would just cut these poor Vietnamese guys' heads off with. you know, the section that we know as the Hanoi Hilton, like where John McCain was that's a very short time frame, you know, during that war. That was just, that was one little segment. The real horror of that prison is what the French were doing to those poor bastards.
Yeah, that's hell on earth.
Yeah.
Is that the one that you were telling me about, the fake Christmas pictures?
Oh, yeah, the propaganda. They'd get all our GIs that they had, the POWs, to make, the, you know, and it's really interesting now because it's a communist country still. And you go there, and they're still selling the idea they treated our guys great in these prisons. And so they'd made them take pictures. They'd set up a whole Christmas dinner. They'd go in there, they'd, like, put decorations up, and these guys would be walked in, sit them down, take a picture, and take them back out again before they could ever eat their food. But they then take that photograph and send it to the States.
Mm-hmm. Happy holidays. We're all good over here.
Yeah. And so it's a very, very interesting world we live in, man, if you bother to take a look at it. But yeah, no, the prison thing, I look at those all over the place. Like, then you go to castles like Edinburgh, the dungeons underneath, and where you, they'd stick those guys.
That's where it gets real weird.
I've climbed down into the hole of the dungeon, like, and that's the real deal in Edinburgh. So what happens is it's a tower, and then there's a circle, and you got to climb down a ladder, because when they pull the ladder up, there's no chance anybody could ever get out of that place. It's a 40-foot drop onto a stone floor, and then down there, well, the bad guys were, the execution guy. I'm telling you, the bad guys were the guards. Like, they'd burn people, or they'd put them in these metal cages, or they'd stretch them out on the rack, and it was all stuff inside there. And that's the rest of your life, when you irritated the king. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to stick to the insane asylum they tore down over by the stadiums. That's my one.
I was in that.
I was going to say, everybody's been to that in high school.
That was creepy.
Yeah. I mean, that was when we were kids.
Yeah, we went, oh, God.
I mean, I bet we were there in 88 or 9.
Yeah, I think 88 would have been when I was there.
2001, too, when we went. That's when we went over there before they tore it down, because the new one was already in place that you could see. As you were talking about seeing a building and an institution from outside at night with the lights glowing, and it looked like Michael Myers type people just zombie walking through the yard, that you're like, oh, God, that's not where you want to be.
Oh, and listen, well, we were talking about the Jeff prisons, you know, in Jeff City, the Missouri State Pen, that just got decommissioned in 2004. And sure enough, Friday, Patrick called us. And he asked us, Jake, and sent me a note, said, hey, look, he did this time. He doesn't want to talk about how he went in there.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, he killed somebody when he was young.
Mm-hmm.
And that's as far as he wanted to go into it. Look, he did his time. And I thought he was a really interesting call, because you can hear a real change for somebody who did. Well, here, I'll let you listen how long he was in. Hold on. Patrick, you were in the Missouri Pen for 7 years, is that right?
Yes, sir, Johnny Dare, you beautiful bastard.
You glorious son of a bitch, I'm glad you're out.
Yes, sir, 7 years free.
Oh, now, you were in for seven, and you've been seven years you've been out.
No, I spent 7 years in Missouri State Penitentiary. I spent a total of 27 years incarcerated in Missouri.
Yeah, dang, I didn't even want to know what you did.
I know, it's pretty bad, buddy.
Yeah, well, are you all better now? Have you committed any crimes since you got out?
7 years. I haven't committed a crime. I haven't drank. I haven't done no drugs. I just been working hard and listening to your ass every morning on the way to work.
Bless you. So how bad was it in Jeff City in that prison?
It was brutal, Johnny. Let me tell you what. When I first went in there, I was an 18-year-old kid, and they threw me in an open dormitory with 165 maximum security criminals. And I did a lot of things in there I wasn't proud of, but somehow you have to keep that rear seal intact. You know?
Well, no, you got to fight. I mean, listen, you're in there. You have no choice but to fight or die, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's hard. And now they give tours. Tell me this. Would you go back and look at it with somebody? Would you go back with a family member and show them like where you were and where everything was? Or would that be just too much?
I have. That housing unit 4 that's closed down was one of the housing units that I celled in. And I was able to actually go in there and point it out and say, hey, look, that's the room that I lived in. And they went in there and they were like, how in the hell could you have possibly lived in conditions like this?
Yeah, well, you don't have a choice, do you?
No. That, incidentally, that building is so old that it housed Jesse James.
Wow.
In that building. The roof was condemned when I was there. They weren't allowed to lock the cell door. We got to lock it with a padlock so we could get out if something happened.
And and then did you ever go to the isolation to the hole?
Yeah, I've done my share of that.
Ooh, he said, the guy James actually found it. He found it. We talked to him before, said it was just unbelievably terrible in there.
Oh, wow. They put you in a, well, back then they put you in a room and a 3-inch high concrete slab was your bunk.
Mm-hmm.
All you got when you first went in there was a paper gown. You got no clothes, no amenities whatsoever.
And total darkness.
Or almost total darkness. There was a small window, but you're looking at a year-round temperature of 53 degrees, and you have nothing on but a paper gown.
No, it's amazing that you don't freeze to death. I mean, I know it's not cold enough, but you've got to be right on the... With nothing to wear, like, that's horrible.
Yeah, you had to go a week before you earned a blanket and a pair of underwear.
Wow.
And if you screwed around, they'd just tack time on.
No, if you screwed around, you go, well, what they did was they would give you 30 days, and you would do 30 days in the maximum hole like that, and any time you messed up, your 30 days would start over.
Mm.
But you did 30 days there, and then you did 30 days in the hole that was a little less confined, and then you did another 30 days in another hole, which was a little less more confined, and then you were put on a waiting list for bed space.
Wow. That's crazy.
Generally, that was a good 3-month wait.
Man. Oh, well, it's and the day you went free, was it, I mean, 27 years in, 27.
Yeah.
How terrifying was it to come out and see how much the world had changed?
It was terrifying. I'll tell you what. I was lucky and got the opportunity to learn some about computers while I was incarcerated. So it wasn't too god-awful bad, but still. I was released from the St. Joe minimum security facility, and the sound of that gate shutting behind me is something that I'll never forget.
Yeah, no, I'm sure you will not, man. That first night in a normal bed outside, I mean, going to a restaurant to eat, I mean, just riding in a car.
It'd have to be confusing.
The very first thing I did was I wanted to go to a shoe store and get good shoes because the shoes they give you are horrendous.
I bet, man. I bet there's a whole list of things that you won't deal with now, stuff that just over 27 years you had to deal with that you're like, nope, none of that, none of that, none of that, none of that.
Absolutely. You know, I had to learn. I learned the hard way about property taxes.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, stuff like that, they don't teach you.
Right.
And without, I didn't have a high school education when I went in there, so I had zero experience in any of that. You know, luckily I was able to get my GED and get some college in.
And now, how's your employer now? How hard is it, even if you've done your time, when you get out, how hard is it to get a job?
It took me 8 months to get a job when I got out, and I finally had to take a forklift job over in Kansas making $9 an hour, which to most people is a crap job, but to me it was a blessing.
Sure.
And I did that for a couple of years, and then I was given the opportunity to move to a major freight carrier over on the Missouri side. And I don't know if you've heard the news, but I worked there for 4 years, and just this week I walked in Monday to a termination.
Why?
They closed our terminal and terminated 25 employees.
Are you a driver?
No, I was a dispatcher, load coordinator, and acting terminal manager.
So now it's, see, this is a risky time for a guy. Like, because, hey, you got to have money, right? And
absolutely.
But above all, you got to stay above board. You can't take a shortcut because, you know, as well as I, you get caught, you'll go back and you'll never get out.
Yeah, somebody like me, no, they won't even look at me again if I ever get another conviction.
Yeah, it's so any lineup on any work?
Yeah, I'm actually driving right now on my way to an interview for another job.
All right, well, good luck to that, man. And, you know, just all you can do is what you already know how to do. You just got to keep it between the ditches for the rest. You know what I'm saying? You just got to make sure that you just pay attention and you can't BS yourself. You know the drill, like you can't, I'll just do a little this or I'll just do a little that just to get by or whatever. You can't. You just can't. You can't risk it, man.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I've come too far. I've worked too hard, and I've got too much to lose. You know, I've got a family, a wife.
That's great.
And living in a little small white house on the corner in the suburbs, you know, I mean, it's a life that I never dreamed even existed, much less I could be a part of something like that.
Well, hold on to it, my friend. Listen, I appreciate you calling, and it's very cool of you, because I think it's important for people to hear that people can get better. They can have a second chance. You can be inside and not and come out, and you can still find a way to adjust. And I think other guys in the joint right now, they're listening. I think it's important that they know that, man, one day, if you try and you keep going and with a little bit of luck, maybe you can have a family. You can be in love. You can have a house. You can be, a normal citizen. And you hope that they'll, that it'll give them a little hope as well.
Yeah, if I could tell them guys one thing, it would be do what you have to do while you're there, but don't lose your heart.
This is the Johnny Dare Morning Show.
The Johnny Dare Morning Show.
On 98.9.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.